customers are sort of living within your app every day, potentially. And so if they're discovering integrations through the app, well, how are you going to educate them from within that login environment as well? And that's where the content consistency means a lot.
Welcome to SaaS Connect, the SaaS Partnership Podcast, brought to you by the Cloud Software Association. Thank you, as always, to our podcast producers, Content Allies. They help B2B companies like you launch revenue-generating podcasts. They'll schedule interviews, produce the podcast, and promote it. Check them out at contentallies.com.
To start with myself, I'm Ryan Lunka. I am one of the founders of Blended Edge. And what we do as a company is both with the products we put out, and we have a couple early stage products out, and professional services that we offer, help primarily SaaS companies or software companies that are SaaS-like to build out their integrations, to think about the process for building out integrations, and to actually execute on these programs so that they can be successful. We do a lot of work in e-commerce, supply chain, logistics, that kind of stuff. Certainly can and do work in other verticals as well. And one of the reasons we wanted to partner with PartnerFleet and Cody in particular is that we felt like he and them as a company have a really good complementary perspective on integrations and how they relate to partner success, specifically coming from the marketing part of marketing your integration stack. And it's what their product does as well. Just goes really nicely, kind of like peanut butter and jelly with the types of stuff that we talk about and the types of stuff that we built for customers. So that, Cody, I'll pass it off to you for an intro as well.
What's up, everyone? Thanks for joining. I'm Cody Sunkel. I'm a founder at PartnerFleet, responsible for mostly sales and marketing. So I'm coming to the integration space from a bit of a different angle, mostly focused on sort of the customer experience, the internal team member experience. And I'm excited to collaborate with Ryan on this discussion because of our complementary nature of how we view this issue overall. Like Ryan mentioned, we're focused on helping companies scale and promote their ecosystems. Our product is a SaaS platform to be able to launch your own white labeled marketplace very quickly and manage it simply over time in collaboration with your partners. Awesome. So let's jump into it here. Before we just jump right into the UX of integrations, we thought we would frame up the overarching conversation a little bit. And so we want to start from like the very beginning, which is, what is an integration? So I know Ryan has a strong perspective on this. And so Ryan, if you could just weigh in and like level set with the group here, how you define integrations.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a little silly to ask it. Like, the dumb answer is it's two software products that talk to one another. Cool. Why is that important though? If you think about the web that everybody knows and uses, and if you think about just how you interact with the internet every single day, and we say this sentence quite a bit internally and in sales presentations, et cetera. Integration is everything. You wouldn't have the experience from your personal use of the web or your business use of the web if integration didn't exist. It's like foundational to what the internet does. So that means if you're building products that intend to deliver value in that world, you should be thinking about integration. And specifically, you should be thinking about how you create what we call cross-product user experiences, where your product sits alongside an adjacent product where the two of you together add more value for the customer or the end user than you would separately. And that should be a primary thing that you are thinking about as you're designing a product, as you're delivering a product, as you're writing the code for it, and everything in between. And a big part of why we want to have this type of a presentation is that it's often not treated that way. And now that's kind of a big, lofty way to think about it. And I know, Cody, you have a little bit more tangible, down-to-earth specifics about why it's worth investing in this initiative overall.
Yeah, definitely. Like, coming from a sales background primarily, and also working in partnerships for a long time as well, you know, the way I'm thinking about it is like, why invest in integrations in the first place, right? And I think the answer there is that they drive major value for the customer. And it also creates the opportunity to create partnerships that can drive value for your own company. So, you know, first of all, the way that I look at this is, when you look at driving value for the customer, there's a few things that you can do here. First of all, is driving leads, helping you drive leads and convert sales. When you look at the importance of integrations, you know, it's becoming the number one buyer criteria to have integrations. It's like sort of a non-starter, right? If you don't have an integration that someone needs, the likelihood that you're actually going to be able to convert them to a lead, convert them through the sales process and all of that is pretty low. having that as sort of table stakes at this point. And then on the flip side of it is integrations, because they're so valuable to customers, are going to drive your customer satisfaction up and drive churn down. So I mentioned that integrations can be the number one buyer criteria. They are also a lot of times the number one churn reason. If you don't have an integration and your competitor does, we're looking at data in the MarTech stack now, and that's the number one churn reason that we're seeing now, is because an integration doesn't exist and it does at a competitor's software. You know, additional data here that we have is that customers that have three additional solutions adopted on top of a platform have a 50% higher retention rate. So super strong value driver there. I also mentioned the benefits of partnerships, right? If you're creating a ton of upside value for your customers through an integration, your partners are going to take note of that as well. It's probably a benefit to their customers as well. So then you have the opportunity to co-sell and co-market and good things like that, elevate both businesses there.
I totally agree. And I think there's kind of a disconnect for a lot of companies between how they view the world and their day-to-day and how they're building the software company that they're building and how customers view them. Yeah. Whether or not you want to buy into any of this nonsense, you think we're crazy people and you don't care about integration, I guarantee you, your customers are thinking about you this way. They're thinking not about what do you do in your little world and what's your little bucket of functionality and why can it help me? They're thinking about you as one patch in this big quilt of software that they are using to get their job done. And they know that there's no way you solve every part of that problem. And they expect you to work as effectively as possible in that patchwork of other software. And so it is required of you to meet those needs that your customer already expects of you. And we kind of think that the overarching issue here and why it's worth even talking about integration and certainly the UX of integrations, which is kind of where we're steering this conversation, is that a lot of companies invest heavily in integration. If we're going to convince you to invest heavily, that's a different conversation. But a lot of companies do know that they need to invest and they do it heavily and then they fail to get the return on the investment. So we want to kind of start going through some of the reasons for why that's happening. A lot of them will end up driving us to the conversation about UX. One of the first ones we had on our list, I'll start with, is just building the wrong integrations. That is a topic that we at Blended Edge talk about quite a bit, blog about a lot. One of our products is intended to help you solve that problem. That's kind of a topic for a different conversation because that's the whole other world of decision-making that leads you to bad ROI on your investment program or integration program. But it is important to acknowledge. And what we're going to kind of think through as a thought exercise for the rest of this presentation is, let's just assume you got that right. We're going to wave a magic wand and you just magically know exactly the right integrations to build and how many of them you should have, because there's a whole bunch of things that are tied back to this UX messaging that are going to cause you to fail to get the ROI you expect as well.
You know, when Ryan and I were sort of prepping for this webinar, the other like overarching theme that we pulled out is really that integrations are not treated like a core feature a lot of times. So a core feature, you're going to promote it. You're going to educate your customer base and your prospects. You're going to bring your internal teams up to speed, make sure they're trained and can have intelligent and helpful conversations with your customers and prospects. And you're going to like really invest energy and effort into creating workflows that are refined and that customers enjoy using. And with integrations, it's kind of like this product that is just like set off to the side and treated differently. Generally, they're not promoted well. There's not a ton of information that's like self-serve available to customers and prospects. The internal team trainings are very limited, and often the user experience and the workflows around it are just not great. And so that's what we want to dive into today, because we think there's so much opportunity to bolster the value of the integration program by just getting some of these basics in place and dialed in.
I can't stress enough how many companies struggle with this problem. I'm very comfortable with integration because we live in that world every day, but like it is crazy how much people put integration off on this like island because they don't want to do it or don't know how to do it or don't see the value in it or some other reason. Like integration is just you're building features that deliver value to your users. And the only difference to them is that you have to co-innovate with a technology partner to achieve the outcome. But otherwise, it's exactly like all the rest of software development that you guys are doing. You should have the same product rigor and the same product methodologies, the same user experience methodologies. You should be prioritizing this on the same roadmap with other product features. Don't have a separate integration roadmap. That's treating it like the other. And so honestly, if there's one thing you take away from this, stop doing that. It is all one big soup. And going back to my point earlier, your customer expects it to be that way, whether you like it or not. And that's definitely how you need to start thinking.
Yeah. So let's just talk real quick about some of the implications of that mindset. I think the first one is a failure to generate leads, right? Like with prospects being so interested in how you integrate with other systems, if they can't find the information that they need to understand how you connect, the likelihood that they actually become a lead for you and go through the sales process is pretty low. Now we're seeing a lot of data that 71% reach vendor selection after a digital only journey in the buyer's process. And 68% of buyer's journey is digital. So having that information available front and center and actually marketed with quality is really important to driving new business that's based on people caring about your integrations.
Yeah, let's tie that to something really, really practical too here. I mean, put this in a real world perspective. That means your customers or your potential customers who might be good fits for your product are coming to your website, they're going to your integrations tab, and they're seeing, do you have my CRM? Do you have my ERP? Do you have my e-commerce platform? Do you have my insert here? And if they don't see it, you don't even get the opportunity to talk to them about the value your product can add.
Yeah. You're missing an opportunity to convert deals that you didn't even know you had, right? You know, alongside that, I mentioned the flip side of this with like failure to, well, now the way we're talking about it is failure to drive increase customer satisfaction and drive retention benefits. If customers don't know how you integrate, they're not going to be able to adopt integrations. There's a lack of awareness there. Maybe they have uncertainty on sort of the path forward on how they implement or install an integration. Those are all things that'll dissuade them from using your product deeper and getting more value out of it, which creates that stickiness factor that ultimately you're expecting and looking for from your integrations program.
We talk about it more in the blog post than we probably will here, but it's worth acknowledging your users' anxieties through this process, because just like a lot of your teams do or have trouble with or feel anxious about integration, I guarantee your user is tenfold. And so even just little things where like they're not sure you can do it, or they're not sure how to go forward, or they're not sure what to do, that's just these little nuggets of anxiety that you're planting inside of your user at every moment. And it really doesn't take much to send them off a different path. Everybody's busy, everybody's impatient, especially on the internet. And you want to minimize any friction you could possibly give them, even kind of under the skin emotional friction.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a good segue, right? Like, I think what this results in a lot of times is a poor customer experience around the integrations, which has a lot of different ways that it manifests and things. So Ryan, if you want to expand on that.
Let's talk about what poor customer experience means. It does depend on the customer and your product and their expectations of what you're buying or what they're buying from you. Some good examples is if you have to talk to a rep to just even understand what integrations are available or understand how to turn them on. Now, I say that with the exception that there are certain contexts like enterprise software or software that is, because of its nature, naturally complex, where the expectation is actually the inverse. Like they expect a concierge handheld type of relationship to go through these things. But you have to understand what your product is, where it fits in your user's world, what they're paying for it. You can't do a concierge service on a budget price point, right? And align those things. You need to make sure whether it is self-directed, which is probably going to be your default unless you have reasons not to, or something like this concierge or somewhere in between. You want to make sure there's a clear path forward, that the user has instructions, that they don't have to go searching for them, that they're written or explained to them in ways that they can understand. Don't throw a bunch of technical jargon at non-technical people. It makes them anxious. It makes them frustrated. They don't understand. They don't want to go forward. It's not a good experience. Again, back to self-service. For most SaaS companies, especially in kind of the mid or lower price points, you're probably going to do everything as self-service as possible because it's not scalable to give everybody a handheld experience. But if you do it and it's a cumbersome self-serve experience because you didn't think through the UX paths through the application and think through what your user is doing at different points in time, then it doesn't achieve its job. Maybe if they magically know how to click the buttons, they can get it done. But if it's too difficult, then what was the point? And then I think another one that's kind of under the hood here that is easy to miss until it's pretty far down the road is that the integration doesn't actually do what the customer needs it to do. I see very commonly a trap that people fall into that they just want to check the box that we have the integration. We have the Salesforce integration. We have the HubSpot integration, whatever. And yes, you do need to be able to check that box, especially in the marketing level when you're getting screened by potential prospects and they're just doing the high level picture. Do they have my CRM as an integration? And I'm using CRM as an example. It can be anything. If you take a one step further, there's a million things you can do with a Salesforce or a HubSpot integration or any integration for that matter. If you don't really understand the user experience or the use cases that your customers are trying to accomplish with that integration, you might just build the wrong thing. A little bit more tactically, that means you might be pulling or pushing the wrong data in the wrong direction to the wrong place. Who knows? Again, if it doesn't do what the customer needs, it doesn't matter that you have it because it's still not delivering the value. And all this sort of leads you to the concept that's sort of the main thesis of our whole presentation today and the blog post, which is that you should be applying the same type of user experience discipline that you apply to the rest of your software application to your integrations, because that is how you solve all of these problems of misalignment with user expectations and friction in the process of them getting value from both your product and the integrations that your product provides.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think we're almost painting like a little doom and gloom picture here with the integrations, but the cool thing is that integrations can be incredibly valuable, and there is a good framework that you can use to make them drive value for everyone who's involved in the integration process, your own company, your partner, your customers, your prospects. So that's sort of what we have laid out here in the blog post, and we'll talk about through the rest of the conversation. So treat integrations just like any other feature, as Ryan said. We're breaking this down into basically five things to consider as you create an integrations user experience. Part of them I can take, and part of them we'll have Ryan explain as well. But just to go through the five considerations here, we have integration availability. Do you have the integration that's needed? The capability, what does that integration do? Like Ryan said, it's not enough to just have a binary checkbox of yes, it exists or no, it doesn't. What actually matters is what does it do and does it solve the need? And then we also have quality, setup difficulty, and confidence. So availability is all about which integrations do you have? And part of that too, that we're going to weave in here is like our three pillars of the integrations UX, which are discovery, activation, and operations. And so the availability is, do you have the integration? And do you have the discovery mechanisms for people to know that you have the integration? And then this leads really into that second point about capability is, what does integration do? Once you have a discovery mechanism set up, generally, and this is the reason I'm talking about it is because this is what we focus on at PartnerFleet primarily, a marketplace for all of your integrations is going to be a great mechanism to showcase all your integrations, make them easy to find to customers, create a marketing grade experience for them to like go learn about all the integrations. And then goes into that next point about capability. What does it actually do? You can have landing pages, you can do co-marketing, things like that to educate your customer base. I think a key part of this is making sure that it's easy to find and that all the information is there, like Ryan said, in a non-technical manner. So it's easy to understand. And then also contains that path forward of like, okay, this is awesome. Love this integration. Sounds like it solves my needs. What do I do now? How do I get it installed? And that sort of takes us into these next components here.
We all know that integration is a challenging thing to talk about. It's kind of complicated. It's like this weird mix of technical and non-technical. It's not something that most people are formally educated to deal with. Like, it's a weird discipline. Why we decided to insert ourselves into this world is probably beyond both of us, but here we are anyway. That means it's difficult to articulate the value of and the functionality of an integration. And it probably varies across the board how you do that. What are some of the best practices, the stuff people put on their integration listing page and how they describe the integrations and how they add context to it? What are some of the best practices that you guys have seen really work well for certain companies?
I'll go through some of the high points here. We also have like a full laid out listing of this in the blog post we keep talking about. I already mentioned this, but making it easy to find. then having content consistency, right? If you have a marketplace that's on your website and you have one that's in your app, the content on there should have consistency across the board, make it really easy for people to understand. A lot of times what I see is that people will stand up a website marketplace and that's sort of the marketing grade version. But then within the app, it's just like an icon you can click on to maybe install the integration. But all of that context and all of that information about what it does and things like that is absent. And so when you think about like customers are sort of living within your app every day potentially. And so if they're discovering integrations through the app, well, how are you going to educate them from within that login environment as well? And that's where the content consistency means a lot. Having good design, like making it a consumer grade experience and easily digestible. So design is key there. Simple navigation. A lot of people don't know what they need in terms of a specific software necessarily. A lot of people are going and trying to say, hey, I need to solve this. How can I find a solution that integrates with this platform that can solve that for me? And so having a good navigation with almost like a Mad Lib experience can really help out there. Actually being able to show like incorporating some media around what does the integration do? Like if you can incorporate any videos, any GIFs, screenshots, et cetera, that can really help people understand what value it's going to drive and how it works. A big thing here is also making sure you have a path forward. So this can be like a conversion mechanism. It's a call to action. It's saying install the integration, or it's saying connect with so-and-so partner, right? It's like given that next path forward. And then lastly, I would say is social proof. So if you can incorporate testimonials or pull in reviews or give a place for your customers to leave reviews, that can be super strong. And it makes it so that people don't have to bounce off of that page to decide whether or not to take action by going to your partner's website or anything like that. They get all the information right on the page to decide whether to take the next step or if they need to find a different solution. So that's sort of the gist, Ryan.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You actually kind of answered Josephine's question. Her question in the chat was, you know, what are the most effective ways to use user experience to educate users on the integration possibilities? And I think the only thing I would add is that in many ways, setting up this sort of integration marketplace experience is a kind of classic content management challenge, right? Especially at scale, when you're trying to manage a lot of content that is communicating often complicated ideas to customers, and you're trying to keep it accurate, you're trying to keep it consistent, all that kind of stuff. You want to think about how to repurpose content in ways that you say it in a bunch of different ways so that the people who need to hear it as a video can hear it, people who need to see it as a diagram can see it, the people who need to read it can read it, and it's consistent across the board. So think about what the core message is and then use multiple media approaches to communicate that. It's one thing to like be able to find the integrations and very clearly explain what they do, but the integration also has to do it, right? Integrations are difficult to build. I know this isn't a technical audience per se, but when you look under the hood for integrations, they are hard to build. And oftentimes the reason you use an integration that frustrates you and doesn't really reliably do what it's supposed to do, it's because under the hood that was challenging. And so the tech team, no matter what approach you're taking, whether you're using an iPaaS or custom coding or using something in between, the technology team really needs to understand what those capabilities that the integration is supposed to do, what's required of them to build, and test against that, automate tests against that, be really, really crisp on making sure that it delivers that. The bottom line is, if it's a low quality integration, it's going to be a crappy user experience. It's not going to help retain your user. It's not going to help add value to your product. It's probably going to detract from it. And kind of related to that, another consideration is setup difficulty. Again, integrations can be very technical, and sometimes you have to, because there's just incompatibilities between APIs, or to deliver on the use case, you have to add a lot of input from the user. Sometimes you can create these setup experiences that are really hard for especially non-technical users to go through. We commonly get asked to set up integrations that have like a full field mapping experience where the user is going to pull up, here's all the fields on the customer record in this system and all the fields on this system. And I want people to drag lines and map how customers map over. And sometimes an experience like that, that's a very highly customizable type of integration, sometimes that's necessary Oftentimes it's not. And that's a really hard thing to do if you don't actually understand how to map data. Thinking about what level of difficulty is acceptable for your users, but still meets the needs for what the integration is supposed to do. Thinking about things like authentication and having to deal with that. Like if you ask a user who's not technical for an API key, that might be a requirement that you might not have a choice, but you have to help them understand what an API key is and where to get it for that other system, because they may not understand that. And if you can't get them through the setup process to get them to turn the integration on, again, it's not delivering value for them. It's not adding value for your product. Nobody wins. Confidence being another consideration, and this starts at the very beginning, right? Starts at you being able to communicate clearly that you have X, Y, and Z integrations and what they do. But it goes all the way across into the ongoing use of the integration and the confidence that even though you're not watching it 24/7 and it's running 24/7, it is doing what it is supposed to do. You don't want to have to look every morning to make sure that everything synced over correctly or everything processed the way it was supposed to process. You want to have confidence in the quality of the integration and confidence that it is helping your users achieve their goals. And then that kind of leads us into the last topic we want to talk about, which are what are the kind of tactical tools to accomplish all this stuff through the three, we call them pillars, but call them phases of the journey through integration, discovery, activation, and operation, which I think are kind of self-explanatory, but I'll kick it over to you, Cody, to start with discovery and talk through like what are the tactical things you need to do to get this right.
Yeah, for sure. And I've already hinted at a lot of this, but to break it down more simply, you have, you know, potentially two marketplace properties, your website marketplace, which is primarily going to be for your prospects, people looking at your solution. And oftentimes this becomes a top three web asset because it is so important for your prospects to know. Some of our customers have the marketplace, the website marketplace, as their second most trafficked digital page behind their homepage, which is pretty incredible. So you have the website marketplace there. You have your in-app marketplace, which is going to be primarily for your customers who a lot of times spend a ton of time in your product. And that's going to be the logical place for them to discover integrations, learn about them, but also where they need to install the integrations. Alongside those two, this is not as obvious maybe, but you have enablement of your internal teams, because your internal teams, your customer-facing teams will be interacting with your customers through the entire life cycle. You know, a lot of times what happens right now is the engineering team builds an integration. People kind of know it exists. That's great. Inevitably, the customer comes to them or the prospect comes to them and says, hey, do you have this integration? I think we do. Let me check. Then they say, okay, cool. What does it do? And then, you know, the customer facing team member is sort of stumped from there. So what you're building as far as like marketplaces or any co-marketing that you do with your partners is also repurposable for your internal teams. And they're going to thank you for creating those assets that they can reference.
I want to add to that. Again, we're talking about user experience, which a lot of that is in the application itself, but it really is more all-encompassing than that. It is the entire picture, or movie probably is a better way to describe it, of your customers' interactions with your entire team, with your software, with all of it. It's their experience working with you as a brand. And the disconnect between sales and technical stuff like integration is a huge friction point in that. Salespeople don't like doing this either. Like nobody likes dealing with integration unless you're a technical person who does integration. But do not accept that a salesperson is not capable of learning how to explain what the integration does and applying that to the business value it adds so that they can describe it to your users that they're trying to sign up. Now, yes, enablement is required for that to happen, but you want your salespeople and your non-technical customer-facing people to confidently speak about the integrations and what they do, adjusted to what their background is, right? They don't need to talk code, but they do need to be able to speak it. And you want to make sure that you manage them to do so and you give them the tools to do so.
Right. And this makes just your internal operation so much more efficient too, because if they have the full access, if they don't, and I lived this, what happens is they'll ping the partnership team and potentially ask the partnership team to come on calls. And the partnership team has to get back to them, maybe interface with the customer on email and things like that. It just becomes really inefficient and a poor experience for the salesperson, the partnership person, and the customer. So,
or even worse, they bring an engineer on the call to explain it.
Right.
Do not want your engineer selling your software.
Hey, you said it.
I think that brings us kind of into the next phase, right? Like, so you've discovered the integrations, you know what they do, you know what's there.
Yeah.
We've done all that stuff, right? Now, the next phase of their like journey of using it is activating it. And Activating it effectively means, what do I need to do to configure and turn it on? So there's a pretty consistent best practice journey. There'll be adjustments depending on how you have to set this stuff up. But generally speaking, you're going to click the tile or click the icon or whatever it is in your marketplace to say, yep, I want that integration. Let's turn it on. And the first thing you have to do is connect to the other system. I'll use HubSpot as an example. You click on a HubSpot icon, it pops up the thing that says, okay, you got to connect to your HubSpot instance. This is called authentication. And basically, this is you as the user of system A telling system B that you're trying to integrate to that system A is allowed to do this conversation. It's allowed to share data back and forth. There's a lot of different ways auth happens nowadays. Ideally, you're doing this through what's called an OAuth handshake, which is an experience you probably are all familiar with. It's where it pops up and says, HubSpot is requesting permission to access your customers and your prospects and whatever. Do you approve this? And you click yes. And it might ask you to log into HubSpot first to do it. That's called OAuth. And that's just a more secure and more common way to do auth these days, but it's not the only one. Not every system supports that. So you might have to provide just a username and password that the system will use to log in. And that's the way you grant it permission to access the other system. It might be, hey, you have to provide an API key, which is a pretty common thing. And to do that, you're required to go into the other system and go get an API key and plug it into the form, right? And you want to make this as seamless as possible. Some of this does get technical, especially if you're not doing that OAuth hop I mentioned. You want to make sure to explain how to do some of the things that might not be super clear to a user. Most people understand username and password. Most people understand checking yes or no. Do you give this thing permission? Anything beyond that, you want to provide some instruction. And ideally, it's instruction that's specific to that other system. Tell them what screen do they have to go into to find that API key, et cetera. So once you get past the auth, which hopefully is right out, you know, giving you immediate feedback that, yep, you put something good in here. I now know how to talk to that system. You're probably going to ask for some configuration. It's not always the case. Some simpler integrations don't really require anything. It just does what it does and everybody gets the same thing. But most of the time there's some configuration and that can be really, really complex. Like we talked about before with like a full-on field mapping experience, it can be kind of simple, just like yes, no questions or multi-selects for options about how you want it to work. And the idea here is that almost everybody has the same integration, but there's some flexibility built in. Maybe you want to allow certain custom fields to sync over that, you know, custom fields are going to be unique by user, by user, by user. Maybe you want some options like, I want you to create a prospect versus a lead, stuff like that. There's a lot of different optionality you can build into these things. And again, you want to make it as simple as possible and articulate it at the level of technicalness that user has so that they can get through that configuration with little or no help.
Can I jump in on that one too? Because I've experienced this firsthand as well at a prior company. We had some integrations that we had a full self-serve auth and configuration process, and then others that sort of required working with our support team to go through that configuration process and all of that. And I'm wondering if you have any like best practices in the case that it's not a self-serve process on a support model that might make sense for that.
It's a little bit case by case because the complexities that prevent you from doing a self-service sort of just click the buttons and go type of integration can vary greatly. So like one really good example is what happens if you're integrating to on-premise software that sits behind a firewall that isn't accessible through the public internet, but you need to connect to it. Like that, it's technically possible to do all those things, but there's a very different methodology for how you go about doing that that involves an IT department usually, or some sort of installation of a local piece of software to do the communication. And so I always just fall back to aligning as best as possible with the technical backgrounds and the expectations of the user. Start there. What's technically feasible? What's financially feasible? And trying to minimize the friction as much as possible. Bottom line is, if you're doing complicated on-premise integration like that, there's going to be friction. There's no way around that. It's just, that's why people put software in the cloud and build APIs now. But you can take steps in the process you go through, how you work with your customers, and the things you're asking of them to reduce that friction as much as possible.
I think my takeaway from experiencing that firsthand also is like, if you are going to have an integration that has a setup process that requires support, make sure you have the support available. If you don't have support available, it's a bad experience all around.
Right. And that also means you have to train your support people, right? There's non-technical support people and there's technical support people. And if you have to help customers through complicated technical integration questions, your support people better be trained to help them through that, or else it's not going to work for your user. Yeah. So the last part of activation, it's kind of obvious, but it's something you should think about. It's your on-off button, right? So the thing about an integration is you're basically automating data going potentially in both directions between two software products. You want to give the user the ability to control when that's happening. Usually they're going to want to turn it on and leave it on, and that's that. But like, stuff happens. Somebody accidentally loads a bunch of bad data in with some CSV import because they didn't know what they were doing. Or somebody runs a bulk update in one system and nuked a bunch of data or changed it incorrectly. And you don't want to permeate the problem by sending it across to other software products. And so there are just reasons that a user is going to want to just shut it down. I need it to stop right now. But there's also auditing reasons and compliance reasons. There's a whole bunch of different reasons you may want to do this. And so you want to make it easy to turn on and turn off the data flow so that your user has full control over what's happening. And that kind of brings us, you know, you've set it up, you've turned it on. Now what happens when you're operating the integration? Because an integration is a living, breathing thing that hopefully lives for years and years and years, and your user continues to have it. So you want to think about how you continue the positive user experience through the lifetime of the integration. The job doesn't end at the on button. So the first thing is logging and monitoring. So both internally and potentially externally, you need to be producing, and I'm using the word logs very loosely, some amount of information or logging that shows that the integration is running, shows which data syncs are happening successfully, and really, especially, which ones are failing, right? If you think about something like a CRM integration, you might have thousands of records syncing every single day, every single week, and maybe three or four of them fail every now and then. And sometimes it's due to bugs. Sometimes it's due to quality. Sometimes it's due to things that nobody could ever foresee or anticipate. The internet is imperfect. Sometimes stuff just breaks. And you have to have some visibility into the fact that that's happening. Now, you probably don't want to provide the same level of technical detail outwardly facing to your users that you would inwardly facing to your engineers, who probably need all that technical detail to debug problems. But you don't want to have an on button and then nothing happens and there's no indication to the user that things are moving correctly. Again, going back to anxiety, they want to know that the thing is working correctly and is doing its job. If you're going to ask them to go into the other system and start poking around through data to see if it looks right, you're not doing a good job communicating to them that the integration is running successfully. On top of that, and we kind of already got into this, the way your support team understands the integration, what it's supposed to do, and what happens when things break or what happens if something's not going right is an important part of the user experience. You need to make sure they're equipped to help the customers through this. This also starts to overlap with the support team for the partner to whom you built the integration. You kind of both have to know about each other's systems a little bit so you understand how to jointly, sometimes maybe even on the same support ticket, jointly support the user when there's a problem or when there's a question. You definitely don't want to have your support teams live in vacuums or live isolated from one another. And obviously, you can't make your support team an expert in every single technology that you partner with, but you want to have at least a baseline of knowledge there that they can work with. And then I think the last thing that goes into managing the user experience on an ongoing basis is making changes or updating the integration. And talked about being able to turn it on and off, but things in systems change, APIs change, the way they're configured changes. And hopefully it's not a common occurrence, but that configuration that you set up when you turn on your integration sometimes needs to change. And stopping a living, breathing integration to tweak how it works and turning it back on can be a cumbersome process, again, if you're not technical, especially. And so you want to think about how do you make that as seamless or as easy as possible for your users so that they can confidently make the updates they need with little or no support from you and keep the thing achieving the goal as the world is changing around the integration. You know, kind of wrap it up. I think we covered a lot and probably circled around on a lot of different things, but any of these are low-hanging fruit for you to improve, and you're not going to get them all perfectly, especially if you're earlier in your product's journey, but you should be constantly thinking about this. You should be, as we said before, incorporating both the integrations and the integration framework or the integration support features around the integrations into your main product roadmaps and your main user experience conversations and all the stuff you're doing for your internal product features and just applying the same principles you would to your product. I think if you start to do that, you'll create these experiences that really reduce friction for your user and kind of blow them away with how well you work with other products in your ecosystem.
Yeah, I mean, bringing it full circle here, I think, like, you know, essentially, if you get this even close to right, it can be a major force multiplier for the company, right? It can drive a ton of value for your customers. It can get prospects excited. It can create advocacy. Your internal teams are going to be happier. You know, so I think there's a lot of benefits to be had by just following a good framework and thinking of your integrations as one of your core features or products, like we've been saying all along.
Absolutely. You know, we came together to create some content around this topic because we believe that we both have perspectives on it that come together to create a more piece of content or presentation, we'll say. We are also looking at ways to come to market together and actually put our solutions together to deliver on this vision. We definitely encourage, if any of this stuff is interesting to anybody listening to this and you want to talk to us about what that could look like, you can reach out to me at ryan@blendededge.com. Cody is cody@partnerfleet.io. We're available in Slack as well, and at CSA Slack. So we're always easy to find. And, you know, this is a big topic. There's a lot of stuff to do here, but there are best practices and there are products that help you achieve this. And we're passionate about this. That's why we spend our days doing it. We'd love to help anybody who's looking for assistance here.
Already, also, like the way we think about our products, they sit beside each other in a very complementary fashion, right? Like Ryan's products is all about the integration infrastructure and we're all about the integration marketing. You kind of need both to execute this plan that we're talking about here. And so while we don't have an integration currently, it's something that we're looking at for the future, but already there's value to be had in looking at two tools like this. So let us know if you want to have a conversation about it. We're happy to brainstorm with people obviously passionate about this space. And I think we can open it up to questions from here, right, Ryan?
Yeah, and we can kick it off. Peter had two of them. First one, probably a pretty quick one. And then the second one, we might have some conversation. So first question was design of integration. You mean how the documentation is presented or good design, how it's used in the product? I would say when we use the word design, we mean all of it. You do want to have an aesthetically pleasing design in your marketplace, in the setup experience, in whatever amount of like operational functionality, logging and on-off buttons and all that kind of stuff that you provide for your user. I would say good design and good seamless design is another one of those things that just makes your user more comfortable, reduces their anxiety about doing something that naturally gives them anxiety. And one thing I would caution, and this is really true of a lot of integration technology, the way it works, if you start iframing or kind of white labeling other technology into your software, it's often difficult to make it feel as if it is embedded in your product. And so you want to really pay close attention to not jarring your user into something that's like, this is the same colors and I see the same logo, but this feels like something different. There may be limitations that you have to work within, and I understand that. But as much as possible, you want to keep that consistent design all the way through. And then the other question was, isn't it better to have seamless integration with some player who gives you access to thousands of integrations instead of looking by yourself to partner with every exact product? Now, that's a huge question. The answer is sometimes it does make sense and sometimes it doesn't. So there's sort of trade-offs to both approaches. If you have an integration to like a unified API, those are kind of a popular approach these days, or to an iPaaS that has a whole library of connectors, which is another popular approach these days, you do potentially have the opportunity to scale to many integration points quickly. It's not just a magic button where you just all of a sudden have these beautiful integrations that work. There's still work to be done to make use of the different connectors or the different integrations that are out there. And you do still need to think about how does that work, whether it's custom per user or something pre-built, how does that translate into the end user experience? But there's also typically a trade-off in what you can provide in the user experience and the depth of what the integration can do versus what you take on yourself, partner directly with the other tech company and build jointly between the two of you. We usually advocate for a portfolio approach to this. Your most important, most strategic integrations, we typically encourage you to keep closer to home, to build yourself or build in a framework. This is kind of what our product does, but build in a framework that is closer to building it in-house than outsourcing it to a kind of a big platform third party. But then as you get down the longer tail of integrations that you're not going to have as many users want to activate, you don't want to invest as much money into owning and maintaining, maybe they don't have quite as much business value for you, using these sort of aggregated platforms like that are a good way to expand your portfolio pretty quickly.
We're excited to put content out here that addresses this topic, because it feels like there's a severe lack of information out there. So it's been exciting for us to like put together the article we keep mentioning, have this conversation live with you all. Hopefully it's informative. Like we said, definitely ping us if you, even if you just want to discuss and kind of nerd out on this stuff, always happy to chat.
Absolutely. Again, we thank everybody for joining us today. It's been fun. Always love doing these things, and we'll see you around on the Slack channel and hopefully some of the events coming up this year.
Thanks, everyone.
If you like this and want more great insights on software partnerships, you've got to rate, like, and subscribe, and join us at thecloudsoftwareassociation.com. Thank you, as always, to our podcast producers, Content Allies. They help B2B companies like you launch revenue-generating podcasts. They'll schedule interviews, produce the podcast, and promote it. Check them out at contentallies.com. We'll see you on the next episode.